Colonel Neil Reel 10.
The bodies of those men killed during the previous night were already starting to decompose. The smell of burnt cordite and HE and smashed timber, mingled with the stench of blood, spilled intestines, decaying flesh, and the stink both of dead and also recently departed live Jap was universal. The whole area was like a charnel house. We were parched with thirst, so I ordered the platoon commanders to organize the collection of all full and partially full water bottles from the dead of both sides. I also ordered them to dig as fast as they could. I knew I could expect to get about 2 boxes of ammunition at the most from A Company, so I organized a very small party consisting of my runner and 2 other riflemen, and leaving Jemadar Chandrabir in charge, went down the intervening saddle to Snowdon West, all of us rolling part of the way to avoid the continuing MMG fire from Whistle. No sooner had I got to A Company's 2 platoons position than I heard the sound of a second counterattack coming in on Snowdon East, and realised very sheepishly that I should have been there and not away collecting ammunition. We grabbed 1 box of 303 ammunition, which was all that could be spared, and returned as fast as we could to the company position. Jemadar Chandrabir had things well in hand. Half the men were digging like mad, and the other half were beating back the attackers. When I reached Snowdon East again, my eye was taken at once by the conduct of Lanceholder Amavada Pun. Everyone else but Amavada was in a trench or behind some form of cover, either digging or firing at the enemy. This brave NCO, however, was standing up without cover at the forward edge of his platoon's perimeter, yelling and screaming like a dervish. His grenades and rifle ammunition having been finished, he was beating off the attackers by hurling empty ammunition boxes and rocks at them. With these crude weapons, he killed 4 Japanese. After the battle, I recommended Amavada for an immediate award of the IDSM, hoping that he would at least be given a bar to his MM. Higher authority returned the citation, saying that his actions did not warrant the award. Small wonder that many of the fighting infantrymen of the Burma War had a poor opinion of some staff officers. Such men rarely earned the epithet we gave them, the gabardine swine. The second counterattack was eventually beaten off, and we continued to dig. The ammunition just brought forward from A Company was distributed. Despite this fresh issue, we were without any ammunition for the Brens, and no more grenades were left. All riflemen were then instructed to give a few rounds each to help fill some of the section's Bren magazines. 3 more counterattacks were mounted against us from the enemy based in Whistle. All were repulsed with, as far as we could see, heavy loss to the enemy. For the last 3 counterattacks, we used rocks instead of grenades, and to repel the final 2 attacks, we had only rocks, bayonets, cookeries, and a few rounds of Tommy gun ammunition, as by this time all rifle and Bren ammunition had gone. When the 5th counterattack had been beaten back, I went round all my platoons to see how they had fared. The Jap shooting must have been very poor, since I found that no one in the company had been killed in any of the counterattacks, and that each one had been pressed home against us in the most determined and frightening way. When I got to 6th platoon's perimeter, at its northernmost point, I found Havildar Subakar. We were looking out together, side by side, with Subakar a foot to my right, to see if we could observe any signs of further counterattacks forming up from the direction of Whistle. Suddenly there was a sharp crack from a 256 Meiji rifle, some 20 yards in front. After the crack, I heard the distinct sound of a bullet hitting something close by to my right. Subakar and I hit the ground and took cover as one man. I turned to him at once and asked him if he'd been hit. He looked round to me and said no. As he did so, I could see the small hole left of the bullet in the crown of his felt hat, right in front and about 3 inches above the line of the pugri. He was probably an inch away from death. He was the only man in the company who had opted to wear his felt hat that afternoon. The rest of us had decided to go bareheaded and to leave our hats with our haversacks on Snowdon West, as we felt they might be an encumbrance during the assault by getting caught up on branches or thorns. When I realised Subakar was all right, I looked to my front within seconds and caught the faint, smoky sign of burnt rifle oil hanging in the air on the near edge of the thick cover 20 yards ahead. That is clearly the place in which the shot had just been taken. I fired 3 long bursts of my Tommy gun, spraying the cover ahead. Nothing happened for seconds. Then, as though in slow motion, the Jap sharpshooter collapsed very, very, very slowly and came to rest, lying on his back, just outside the cover. His arms were flapping very quickly for about a quarter of a second, just like a pheasant flaps its wings when it's been shot through the head. That was the last Jap to die in the Snowden East, and the very last one we shot during the war. And then there was silence. Looking around me, I could hardly believe that this was all that was left of my B Company. More than 60% of it had gone. The tired and haggard faces of the soldiers standing two in the trenches nearby bore evidence of the strain of the past 3 hours' fighting. I was very proud of them. They had indeed remembered their colonel's instructions and Captain Snowden East, regardless of cost. At about 17:45, the CO and Major Clark and C Company came up to saddle, and I was told that I was to be relieved by the fresh company, after which I was to take B Company down through Snowden West and Point 85 to Tobacco, where the second-in-command, Major Adrian Hayter, had prepared a hot meal and a rest area and dug positions for us that night. It was getting dark when I reached Tobacco, where Adrian met us with guides and took us to our bivouac area. Whilst the men were having their meal, I asked my company 2IC, Subedar Manbaragurung, to get me an accurate casualty report. Our bayonet strength when we had crossed the start line at 14:30 had been just over 60 or so. When Subedar Manbada brought me the answer to my query, I was eating my evening meal. He reported that 11 men had been killed and 34 wounded, the majority of whom were very, very serious. Of the latter, one rifleman died the following morning after I had visited him at the brigade FDS. Many never returned to duty and eventually left the army because they were no longer fit to serve. And of these, one young rifleman in 4 Platoon, Toy Bada Tapa, eventually lost the sight of both his eyes. Had my Gurkha wounded been female pregnant soldiers in today's British Army, they would have fared rather better than they in fact did, since disability pensions in those days were minuscule. On the credit side, 35 Jap bodies were found on and around Snowden East, and over 80 more were picked up in the nullahs to the northeast and east of the objective, the latter no doubt being those Japs we had killed during the five counterattacks. That was the story, then, of the Battle of Snowden East. All companies in the battalion had been involved in one way or another, either in the fighting, or in the portering of ammunition and water, or the evacuation of casualties, all such administration being the responsibility of our exceptional senior Gurkha officer, Subedar Major Tikajit Pun, IDSM. Some 12 years later, the regiment was granted, as a result of our victory, the prize battle honour at Tamandu. Ruling aside the facts that the fighting took place in the most rugged terrain and was against a fanatical and skilled defence, the Snowden operation was, I think, made all the more remarkable when one considers the shortage of water, rations and ammunition that existed at the time. It is relatively easy to fight well on a full stomach and with plenty of rounds in one's pouch, coupled with adequate fire support from the necessary supporting arms. When the stomach is empty, and has been empty for some time, when one has a raging thirst, and the last round has been fired, and the supporting arms absent or inadequate, then the battle takes on a very different hue. It is at such a time that one needs discipline, courage, pride of race, and above all else, pride in regiment, more than ever before. These qualities were not lacking on Snowden East. It is not surprising, therefore, that I should despise the four colonels of the former Gurkha rifle regiments for deciding without given sound reason to discard, on the recent reorganization of the Gurkha Brigade, the prized identity of our regiments. All these men are ignorant of battle through no fault of their own, and may, therefore, have some excuse for their blinkered action. However, by their destruction of regimental pride and their taking away of identity, they have forfeited all respect in the eyes of not only the old soldiers who won the battle honours of the past, but in the eyes of many of the younger generation to whom pride in regiment is something about which they are just beginning to learn. There are no winners to come from the colonel's decision, only losers. The morning after the battle, 6 March, in fulfilment of the 74 Brigade plan, 716th Punjabis passed 2 rifle companies through Tobacco and on to Snowdon. From Snowdon east, they moved northwest up the ridge. One company was to attack Whistle, and later the other company was to assault Strong astride the Tumundu Ann Road. Fierce enemy resistance on Whistle, however, made it necessary for both companies to be committed against this feature. Both company commanders and the majority of VCOs were killed in this attack, which was finally successful, with the objective being taken at the point of the bayonet. The 3rd Punjabi Company was then brought forward for the assault on Strong, but despite the most determined efforts, this attack was not successful. After the 716th had taken Whistle, Colonel Panton went forward to liaise with the Punjabi CO, Colonel Ian McHarg, but on reaching the captured feature, Philip Panton was wounded in the thigh during hostile shelling by the Japs of the Whistle area. Colonel Panton had to be evacuated when Major Hayter took over command of 3rd Second Gurkhas. On 8 March, a second attack on Strong was planned and a pincer movement was launched from the west and the east by a Punjabi company and from 1410 Baluch. Again, this attack was unsuccessful. The brigade commander then decided to destroy the enemy position by artillery fire, and medium guns were brought up to Tumundu to assist 8th Field Regiment in this task. On the same day, 5 Nigerian Regiment of 82 West African Division crossed the Dela Chong to the north of Tumundu and, under the command of 74 Brigade, advanced south of Snowdon to commence an outflanking movement to cut the Tumundu Ann Road east of Wetherby. A 2nd African Battalion then passed through, following the route taken by the 1st. Orders were now received the 25th Division were to withdraw to Akab at the end of the month. Meanwhile, between 8 and 10 March, medium artillery had been bombarding Strong, and African patrols covering the Ann Road to the east caught 3 parties of the enemy garrison trying to escape. At first light on 11 March, Punjabi patrols found that the Japs had evacuated Strong and the road to Ann was clear. On that date, later in the day, 3rd Second Gurkhas redeployed as follows. D Company relieved the Punjabis on Strong, and B Company took over their position on Whistle. A and C companies remained on Snowdon West and Snowdon East respectively, with TAC HQ moving in between Whistle and Snowdon East. We remained holding these positions on the ridge between Snowdon and Strong without further contact with the enemy, whose remnants had already commenced their withdrawal eastwards over the Arakan Yomas. On 16 March, the divisional commander, Major General Sam Wood, brought the corps commander and the Chief of Staff Southeast Asia Command, Lieutenant General Boy Browning, to visit the battalion, and Major Hayter conducted the party over the Snowdon battlefield. On 24 March, companies withdrew from their positions on the ridge, and the battalion concentrated at the road junction 5,500 yards southeast of Tumundu. Early in the morning of 25 March, 3rd Second Gurkhas embarked by company groups in landing craft, which took us down the Setcore River to where SS Barpito was waiting anchored to take us to Akab. As my company's leading landing craft drew away from the Tumundu, we all turned round and saw for the last time a glimpse of the torn western slopes of Snowdon East, and the withered trees standing out stark and clear against the green background of the surrounding jungle. This, although we did not realise it at the time, was the end of the road, for the war against Japan was, for us, as far as our 3rd Battalion was concerned, over. For the Battle of Snowdon East, the battalion was awarded the following gallantry awards. A Company, 1 Platoon, IDSM, Naik Bombarda Thapa. B Company, 4 Platoon, IDSM, Lance Naik Bisram Thapa and Naik Tuliale. MM, Rifleman Sherbada Gurung. 5 Platoon, VC, Rifleman Bunbhakta Gurung. IOM, Jamadar Chandrabir Thapa. IDSM, Naik Likbada Thapa. MM, Naik Sherbada Gurung, Rifleman Chabilal Garte, and Rifleman Karnabada Gurung. 6th Platoon, MM, Rifleman Asbada Thapa, and Havildar Subhakata.